I'm going to talk a little bit about what we call a hurting woman. You may remember the story of a woman who had been bleeding for many years and wanted to be healed. Let's go ahead and just read it to refresh your memories of some of the details. You know, I always thought that I knew the story, but when I read it, I picked up a few more things, and then I read it again, and I realized I'd missed a couple of other lines that all just really added up. It's Mark 5, 24 to 34 is where we're going to be reading out of. There is, of course, the story in Matthew as well, but I found it didn't have as much detail. So we'll go with Mark, who gave us a little more information. So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She'd suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she got worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," the disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." The story of the sick or hurting woman is a story of faith. It's a teaching on how it can look and how it works on a practical level. Let's start with a little background about where this woman came from. In the story, she'd been bleeding for 12 years without stopping. And according to the law in Leviticus, that made her unclean. And that was a really big deal. What does that mean on a practical level? You need to take a look at Leviticus 15, 25 through 31 to see what this really meant for her. When a woman has a discharge of blood for many days at a time, other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has the discharge, just as in the days of her period. Any bed she lies on while her discharge continues will be unclean, as is her bed during her monthly period. And anything she sits on will be unclean, as during her period. Whoever touches them will be unclean. He must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. When she is cleansed from her discharge, she must count off 7 days, and after that she'll be ceremonially clean. On the 8th day, she must take 2 doves or 2 pigeons and bring them to the priest at the entrance to the tent of meeting. The priest is to sacrifice one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. In this way, he will make atonement for her before the Lord for the uncleanness of her discharge. You must keep the Israelites separate from things that make them unclean, so they will not die in their uncleanness for defiling my dwelling place, which is among them. So for 12 years, she's been treated like a leper. No man would want to be near her or any place she's ever even been, because it wouldn't be worth the risk of becoming unclean himself. And then having to go through the ritual of cleansing and washing and still being unclean until evening. She'd be a pariah and very alone. And what do you think she thinks of herself? See, near the end of the verses above, we read that the Israelites must remain separate from things that make them unclean because it defiles the dwelling place of the Lord who dwells amongst them. That means, from her point of view, she is the cause of defiling God's dwelling place constantly, and she can't do anything about it. And it's not like she hasn't tried to do something about it. She'd been to many doctors. She'd spent all of her money. and it didn't get her anywhere. I did some research and found out that there were 11 different cures in the Jewish Talmud for this problem. And I couldn't find out what those cures were, but just by the phraseology in that text, I get the feeling it probably was not very fun. Kind of like being in a hospital now. You can wind up very ill or broken or sick in a hospital today and feel completely isolated and helpless. And knowing that every minute that you're in that hospital is a few more $100 you're spending that you don't have. And that must have been a lot how she felt for 12 years. Broke, broken, and helpless. A disgrace and nothing she can do about it. I guess we can kind of feel that way sometimes too. So she heard about a man named Jesus who supposedly could heal anyone. Well, you know that she's going to have to go and find out for herself. She's desperate. She'll try anything. She has tried anything and everything. I wonder what it was like to have tried to get into that crowd and maybe not be noticed. Because you know that everyone's going to know that she's the woman who's always unclean. So how does she get into that crowd? There's a picture that some great painter guy, whose name I don't remember, painted of that scene, what that might have looked like. And it was interesting to me because in the picture, she had her head covered completely with a shawl. None of the other women were had their faces hidden like that, but she did. And that it made me wonder if the idea behind that was that she may have been so ashamed all the time that she didn't even want to be recognized. She didn't want anyone to know she was there because it might cause a ruckus or they might try to get her to go away. She was the epitome of the invisible person. Lost in a crowd that no one wanted to acknowledge. When she reached him, she thought to herself, if I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. She touched him and she was healed. But what healed her? Was it touching his cloak? Was there something about the cloak? Was it touching something that was touching him? If she had managed to grab his hand instead, would she have been healed more? I ask because sometimes I come to really wish that Christ would just come back. That he would hurry up and come back to us and be here physically, in person, in body, so I could see him and touch him and know him that way. There's something in me that needs a physical representation of his power and who he is, preferably his own body. And it makes me wonder if that need for a physical representation that we all kind of seem to have was what enticed Israel to worship statues instead of their own God, who said never to create a physical representation of him. Perhaps it was that belief that made the woman think she had to touch him in order to be healed. But you see, Christ answers our question for us in a very direct and clear way. Because he doesn't say, you touched me, you have been healed. He said, your faith has healed you. It wasn't touching him that healed her. A lot of people were pushing up against him. They weren't all becoming miraculously healed. It was her faith in him that healed her. the touching in part was almost like a kind of a boost for her, something that fired up her faith enough to believe that she could be healed. It makes me wonder if she had thought instead, if I just get within a few feet of him, I will be healed. Would she have been healed just by being in his presence? It makes me wonder if I say to myself, if I accept him into my life, I will be healed. If just by inviting Christ into my life, I will be healed by my faith. You see, it's our faith in him that can heal us or strengthen us or protect us from evil. If I ask him for anything in faith, it will be done. And that faith needs to rest solely on understanding that Christ is alive and well and with us always. He's listening to our requests and giving us those things that we ask of him that are good for us. Which is also hard to believe and have faith in sometimes, because I know that there are things I've asked for that I haven't gotten. And it made me look at Matthew 7, verses 9 through 11. Because Jesus says, "Which of you, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you're evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him?" Notice he said good gifts and not necessarily what we want, but what we need. Sometimes we ask for things that aren't good for us. And he says no. But that should not negate our understanding and our faith that when we ask for things that are good for us, he gives them to us because he loves us. But sometimes we get kind of desperate and we try to pray harder for things. If I just pray harder, more fervently, if I scrunch up my face and clench my fists, that will work. Or maybe if I rely on physical objects, if I'm in a church building, God will hear me better. If I kneel in front of a cross, God will hear me better. I think sometimes we need that physical object to help embolden our faith, and I don't know why that is. But as we were taking communion today, and we took the bread that is his body, and I took the juice that represents his blood, and I took it into me, and I felt my strength grow again, and I felt that closeness, that oneness, that God is with me and God is with us. It makes me kind of wonder if God kind of understands that about us. That he realizes that sometimes we need something more physical, more tangible to help us in our walk in faith. He calls each of us the body of Christ. And even though I ask that Christ would come back, would come here, I could see him and touch him and know him, I think sometimes when I'm asking that and praying for that, I forget that his body is already here. That his spirit is in each one of us. And when I need a hug from Christ, I can hug my wife. And when I need to talk and hear an answer, if I need to ask a question that I don't understand, I can ask Rob. There's something about the connection between faith without needing an idol and faith that is bolstered by a physical element. I think it's one of those things that as we work on, we need the physical element less. There certainly wasn't a physical element when the fellow walked out on the water because Jesus said, come on out. But even in that, his faith didn't last very long, did it? It's like, I'm doing it. Wait, there's no way I can be doing this. I think God knows that we can get confused and that we can accidentally wind up worshiping the physical objects. I honestly feel that that's why he warns us to not make the idols and not bow down and not worship the idols. Because we can get confused and think that that physical object is what we should be worshiping. We can start thinking that that physical object is more important than the spiritual truth behind God's power. But God's power doesn't need the physical object. See, our faith needs to be in God, not the object. And we have to remember that he sees and hears us, even in secret. Sometimes he even tells us to pray that way. Objects don't make our prayers louder in his ears. Our faith in him makes our prayers louder in his ears.